So, listeners, we have some fun news to share. Not only do we have an opportunity to fundraise for an amazing
organization,
but I get to check something off my bucket list, and you get to volunteer your husband.
I know. I'm so excited.
We are super excited. Both Trisha and I are separately supporting Jump with Above and Beyond Cancer. This is from their website, and I thought I'd read this because it says 20 local celebrities have agreed to do a tandem parachute jump out of an airplane in central Iowa in order to raise funds for Above and Beyond Cancer. Mm-hmm. And I guess that means we're celebrities.
I know.
We will take it.
Exactly. Such an amazing organization.
They don't just have programs for survivors, but also for caregivers.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
I'm jumping for Judy, Jason's yes. Mr. Producer's mother, mm-hmm. and for my friend Shannon, who's a cancer survivor.
Yes. And Jeremy is jumping for his mom, Jody, who had breast cancer, and his grandpa Ernie and his aunt Kimbra, who both had passed away from cancer.
You have the opportunity to donate in someone's name, so very special. Any support you want to give us would be amazing. We'll have both links in the show notes.
If everyone were to donate a dollar.
Even a dollar.
Even a dollar. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It does.
The goal is $100,000. Now, there's multiple people raising money.
20 people.
So each of us, our goal is to raise $5,000.
Sastastic Life with hosts Trisha Rivas and Wendy Fredrigal.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
We are excited to introduce you to Dr. Amy Hughes.
Hello.
So, Amy, I got to meet you in a professional way and got to know you, and then our worlds kind of collided in other ways. So it's just, I was excited to have you on because you have a lot of unique life experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You are currently an oncologist.
Correct.
And you have a nonprofit that you started. So we're just really excited to talk about all things that suck, like cancer.
Yeah.
But your journey to become an oncologist, kind of whatever
moves happens. Up. Yeah.
But today is also National Day of Happiness.
Yes.
Yes.
So what brings you the most happiness?
So many things. I love life. So for me, I like to be involved with things that bring me laughter too. Mm-hmm. So of course, children. So my children, of course, bring me joy. My family brings me joy. I really love being outdoors. Mm-hmm. It's super recentering for me. So that's a huge bring me happiness thing.
Yeah.
And then I also really like to do things like woodworking or things with my hands, because I think it's just honestly because of the nature of my job. It's so much mental work that it's nice to be able to separate from that and just physically do some other things. So, yeah.
Could you whittle me a rocking chair?
Sure. Totally. Totally.
So I'm thinking of I'm sitting here thinking of outdoor spaces, and the very first time I barely know you, I come to, hang out with you guys, and I broke one of your wine glasses.
You did.
Been sitting down for about 5 seconds.
Yeah, on my patio. Yeah.
Of course she did.
Yeah. It was a brand new glass, too. It's fine. I'm not upset about it.
It was crystal. It was really expensive.
It was an heirloom.
An heirloom.
I like to break things.
Oh, my goodness.
So, it's also world tell a story day.
Yes. Yes.
So what story do you want to start with?
Oh man, that is a really broad question. Can you narrow that for me?
So you do a lot of storytelling.
We do.
Yes. People's journeys. So tell us a little bit about that.
We do. So I started a nonprofit in 2022. We got our 501c3. Originally under the name Love and Legacy, and we film basically life stories. So we film legacy videos, so life stories for individuals who have life-limiting illnesses. So we have, of course, focused primarily, it was originally our cancer patient population, just by nature of what I do. And when we were able to go public with the 501c3, it allowed us to open the door. So Huntington's, ALS, early stage Alzheimer's, any of that. And so we've been really, really fortunate to have an incredible response from the community. We have filmed something around, I'd have to honestly look at numbers, but it was somewhere around probably 32 videos that we have filmed. And just, it's incredible. It's really incredible. It's really special for me too, specifically when I have, when I'm doing the interview for one of my own patients. It's really special because you see a completely different side of them than you ever would have been exposed to in the clinic. And it just really gives me just, I just feel incredibly blessed with it. They're like, they're funny. Yeah. And they're telling these hilarious stories that you thought, oh my God, I never knew that they had this side to them. Yeah. It's just, it's incredibly rewarding. So that has been a really wonderful addition to just sort of my life in general. It's busy, but worth it. Keeps me sane with my everyday job. Yeah, it's been really amazing.
And is this something they give to their family or is it just for themselves?
Yes. So it is designed so that they will have something to leave behind for their family. Okay. I'm fortunate that I have a really huge network of physician mm-hmm. around the country.
Yeah.
A network that I could reach out to and say, okay, for all of you who have lost someone, whether that's a spouse, a child, a parent, whoever it is, what's something that you miss? And over and over and over again, it was audio and video. Yeah. You know, it's very different than having still photos. It's different than letters are amazing. Still photos are beautiful. Mm-hmm. But it's very different to have body mannerisms and smiles and laughter and voice.
Yes.
You know, it's just a completely different aspect of it. And so I knew at that point that we were in the right direction for where we were starting with the nonprofit. And Mia Ellis, who's my co-founder and also a coach and was in town, she's moved, but she was like the natural person to pair with for that. So it was just this really beautiful just coming together of this program that we were able to put together. And the community has stepped in for volunteer work and so and donations. And it's totally free for the patients and their families because of really generous donations and grants.
Nice.
So it's really truthfully just for the benefit of the patient and their family.
Have you been able to be a witness when they give the video?
Not at the moment of, okay. but I frequently get feedback after the fact.
Yes.
So I mean, one of probably my favorite is I had filmed a patient of mine who I just adore and hilarious body. You'd love her. Great. And at the time, her family knew that she was doing it. And she has a son in early 30s. And he was like, I don't need a video. I'm going to remember her regardless. I don't need anything. And so I thought, okay, well, and she still wanted to do it. So we did it. And when she passed away, I went to her funeral. And when I walked up to the front of the line to see her son, he gave me this hug. And, you know, he's like a stoic guy,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And he said, hey, I liked your video. And I was like, you did it, right? Like that to me was such a like reinforcement of, okay, this is good. This is a great job. So we really are, I love having feedback from recipients just because we do hear how much it impacts them to be able to have that, right? To go back to hear it, to see it.
Yeah. I love that. And what's the name of the nonprofit?
So we rebranded. So we were Love and Legacy. We rebranded to Amadora Legacy Project.
Okay.
So Amadora, the name Amadora in Italian means gift of love. And I'm Italian. And my grandmother had Alzheimer's. And so I missed out on her stories that I wish I would have had.
Yeah.
Just an incredible woman.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of where the inspiration came.
I love that. Yeah. We'll make sure we have all of those links in our show notes too.
I appreciate that.
So, did you start in oncology or were you in other medical areas before you went to oncology?
I always knew it was oncology. I don't ever remember a time when I was growing up where I thought of a different job other than medicine. Mm-hmm. Like my mom was a nurse. My dad is in the medical field and it just never really occurred to me that I would do something different. It was just sort of a natural fit. And I remember when I was in kindergarten, I remember one of my classmates having leukemia and being bald and going to her birthday party. And there are like vague memories of that. So I was exposed to it at a pretty young age. And then when I was in my teens, later teens and early 20s, we had a couple of losses in the family. So it was just sort of one of those things. I actually became a hospice volunteer at the age of 16 when I was at high school in Michigan. Our high school is the first in Michigan, third in the country to train high school students to do hospice work. And so that's when I first started hospice work. And I stayed with various hospice organizations for multiple years, mm-hmm. To the point where one of them asked me actually to train in Reiki for them. So I'm actually certified in Reiki as well.
Okay.
Through them because they wanted me to use it with patients. And so it just sort of opened the door to a lot of both integrative medicine stuff as well as just kind of this whole aspect. Let's be honest, death is hard for people to talk about. Mm-hmm. They don't like to talk about it. And for me, I just feel like it's a natural, it's not something I'm afraid of. It's not something I have a difficult time talking about. So for me, it was sort of a natural fit. I was really drawn to that phase. I was drawn to, it's a really, really hard time, right? When you're in that position with patients and their families and they're making these critical decisions about what to do, right? And so I think that can be really hard for some physicians to do. It's just a different skill set.
Yeah.
And I just have always really felt very comfortable with it and felt like what a privilege mm-hmm. it is to be able to walk somebody through such a difficult, dark time frame, right? And hopefully make it a little bit lighter along the way. But yeah, I don't know. Oncology has always been my world.
I'm sure they appreciate that too.
I hope so.
I have no doubt that they do.
Well, you mentioned that you are a certified death doula, and yes. I hadn't heard of that before.
Yes. So I am. You know, everybody knows about birth doulas, right?
Yes.
So they actually do have doulas for the opposite end of life. And it's really designed as a supportive measure for family, for patient, obviously, as well, but also for families. So on some level, it's a little bit like the respite work that you may see some like hospices do. But it's more than that. It's more patient-directed. There are certain rules around being a doula about what you can involve yourself with and what not to, et cetera. Because obviously, as a doula, normally, you wouldn't be like a trained medical professional like I am.
Yes.
And so there are certain things that you're trained around doing or not doing. But I really loved it because I feel like, again, I think it's scary for family who are not familiar with what to expect at the end of life. I think it's a really scary thing. I think it's very intimidating. And so having the skills for somebody to be there and to walk them through, okay, this is what is the most likely next step. This is what they're going to experience. This is how you're going to feel, right? Just kind of going through it, I think is so incredibly helpful. And then as a doula, you're also trained in things like you learn about green burials and you learn about, you know, all this legal paperwork. So there's just a lot of stuff that goes along with it. I really felt like it was a natural piece of my training. Like I just kind of felt like I already had a lot of training that really was similar to the death doula world just because of how I interact with patients at the end of life. And so I really felt like it was a natural fit to just sort of add that to my,
And with your work with hospice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, and it's interesting because at first I didn't even tell people that I had the certification because there is a lot of stigma around death.
Yes.
And so I thought, oh God, people are going to think I'm really weird, right? Like, you're a what, right? Are you obsessed with death? Are you morbid? Yeah. Like, what's wrong? And so I didn't really say much. And actually, it was Mia that I told first. And she said to me, why don't you tell people?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I don't know. People are going to think I'm weird. And she goes, well, I think you're going to be surprised. I think you're going to be really surprised that when you start talking about it, there'll be so much more that comes out and people will be really interested. And that's exactly what happened.
Yes.
And some of it was like the universe just came to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like I didn't do any of it. And all of a sudden it would like fall in my lap.
Yeah.
You know, I had very soon after that, when I was trying to figure out how to tell people, I had a patient in clinic that saw me and her mother says, well, you know, I've been training to be a death doula. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what? So it just kind of like opens up when you least expect it. And so we had this lovely conversation. I've had multiple conversations with people since that time, least expected, that they were fascinated by the idea of it. And I'd love to know more about it. And wow, maybe I want to do it. And yeah, so it's been really interesting to see the response from it. I think it's needed, though.
Yes. At a time that's so traumatic and sad, it's comforting to have someone in your position that can be that calm in the storm and answer questions and give that comfort.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody's involved is on their own journey of healing.
Yeah, absolutely. All in different places.
Yes, exactly.
So are your patients like all ages?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't do pediatrics.
Okay.
So basically, you know, 18 and above is what we treat for the adult world. I would say, well, I just really feel like I get a younger and younger crowd, which is a little unnerving, right? I have so many patients in like 30s, 40s, early 50s that when I started doing this, you know, 15 years ago, I don't remember that heavy of a young population. Of course, I had some, but I just don't remember it being that heavy of a age range. And I just feel like I see it all the time now. So it's a little unnerving. It's almost like I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? Because how do you know it's not going to happen to you, right?
Seriously.
But yeah, it's a pretty broad spectrum of, and I treat all cancers. So everybody at Mission is technically general oncology. So we can treat any of it. Some of us just kind of sort of subspecialize based on referral patterns. So I do a lot of breast cancer, lung, lymphomas, et cetera. So just kind of depends on who you're getting your referrals from, but we all treat everybody.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but Iowa is one of the most leading states for cancer right now.
You're correct. It's actually number two. So we're
number two.
Yeah. We're the number two only behind Kentucky.
Yeah.
Kentucky is ahead of us.
And it's becoming, I cut hair at John's daughter.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Cancer patients. Yeah. And so John's daughter's always very good about giving us the statistics. And the amount of young people now that are being diagnosed with cancer is unnerving.
It is. Wow. It is. It's really interesting too. If you, I don't know if you've seen the actual report, but there's a, I'm going to blank on the name of it. It's like the Iowa Cancer, I can't remember the name of it, but they have a booklet that you can, it's a PDF that you can download.
Okay.
And it has the state of Iowa all by county, and it's color-coded based on like cancer incidence, death rates, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because some of it, you almost go, oh, that's weird. Is it like a pattern with the highways? And then you go, well, maybe it's access, right? Because maybe it's that the higher death rates are rural because they don't have as much access, et cetera.
Sure.
But it's also like, this is all agriculture. And so what's interesting about that report is that they sidestepped the question about food exposure, pesticides, et cetera, right? So they talk about alcohol use, they talk about obesity, which we know are risk factors for sure. Smoking, we know that. Mm-hmm. But they sidestepped this question about, you know, environmental concerns with we have so many pesticides in our state, right? We're a lot of farming.
Yes.
And so I don't think anybody who works in the field of oncology would doubt that there's a link. I really don't think. I mean, we already know that, you know, Monsanto got sued because of FOMA risk, right? So we know that there's a link there. Yes. It's like the cigarette industry who, you know, they had data forever. Agriculture industry is huge, super strong. So who knows where the data will come out. But I think everyone suspects that that's a link. For sure. So, but yeah, young people for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you had mentioned that like death, you're not afraid of death.
No.
But how, especially when you're raising kids, like how do you come home from a day of work and seeing all of the sadness and like how do you
feel
that when you get home?
You know, I think part of that is just experience. I think over the years, you learn to somewhat compartmentalize that, right? I don't even think I appreciate how much trauma medical training puts you through, right? Yeah. There's a tremendous amount of trauma and deaths that you are part of, both through residency training, fellowship, et cetera, because you're responding to all the codes, you're doing everything. Yeah. And so there's just a lot of stuff that you were just trained to just keep moving, right? Yeah. You just keep going. You don't stop.
Yeah.
Like, you have to take care of the next patient.
You don't have that emotional aspect.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, there's literally only one time in my entire, so I've been an actual physician, a full physician, not just oncology, but since 2005. And there is one time that I can think of in my entire career where I hit the wall in the middle of clinic and I said, I can't do it. I'm done. And I walked out and I told my head partner, and he was like, I got it. I'm good. Like, we'll reschedule. We'll take care of the patients who are in the afternoon. But we got it sorted through. And at that point, I was just like, I can't go into another room.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the one time in my entire career that I left. Outside of that, you literally just, you kind of learn to, you know.
You have to.
Yeah.
You do. You have to.
Yeah. So it's hard. Like, when you get home, in the beginning of my career, it would stick with me a lot longer. And I think when you're in the oncology world, I think you just realize, like, thankfully my undergrad degree is psychology. So
nice.
I feel very comfortable with that aspect of it.
Yeah.
And it's really understandably clear that there's a lot of grief, there's a lot of anger, and they don't want to be angry at their loved one. So you get the anger. So a lot of times I get family members who, I know it's not me, but I'm getting the anger directed at me. And so there's this cognitive dissonance, right? And so you're just like, I know that I just have to rationalize. I know they're not mad at me. Mm-hmm. I know that they're just angry that their loved one's dying. And so I've had that conversation multiple times with my team, you know, when they get upset because the patient's family member's yelling at them. And I'm like, okay, but think about what's happening, right? Like, they're going through one of the worst times of their lives because of what's happening with their loved one. That's why they're upset. And it's just, it's hard, right? It's hard to, like, deflect anger off of you.
Yeah.
And so there are definitely times where my husband, thankfully, is incredibly supportive, and I may pull into my driveway and I may sit in my car for a half hour.
We do that too.
Yes. And just decompress for a little bit before I can go inside.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's really why, you know, we go to our property out in the country, because nature is so rejuvenating and resetting. And it's just, if I didn't have that outlet to just kind of reset, I don't know what I would do, honestly. But
yeah.
They know, it's your significant other knows when it's been a bad day also, when they have to call you like after 45 minutes. Mom, are you coming into the house?
Yeah, yes, usually
just
like
another 15.
He'll like peek open the garage door and be like, okay, she's still in the car. Yes.
Just give me another 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about this as hairstylists. Like, I wasn't prepared for the things that people would tell us.
Yeah. No. And you guys are like shrinks.
We really are. Like, but we didn't get trained on how to handle all of that. I was often the first person to find out someone had cancer. They would tell me before they'd tell.
Yeah.
I'd be the first one to find out they were pregnant, or
yeah.
And so being the keeper of all these secrets and like,
yeah,
it was hard. I had to, I took it very personally for a very long time.
But you know what also, I think, does a tremendous job with refocusing you, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was really clear to me with everything I see day in and day out. It's so clear to me about what life is about. Like, it's your friends, it's your relationships, it's your family. It's not about, you know, your $5 million house or your fancy car, or, you know, and that I'm grateful for because of my patients, because they're the ones really who reflect all of that to me, because they're going through it where they realize this stuff isn't important.
Exactly.
This material stuff doesn't mean anything. It's my relationships. And so that's one of the most rewarding things for me, is it's a hard job, but I get so much benefit out of it. And it's so rewarding to be able to then be able to share that too with my kids, right?
Yes.
Because that's super important for me, for my kids to, I want my children to be involved with volunteer work or service work. I want them to love helping people.
Yes.
And thankfully they do. But it's hard to teach stuff like gratefulness to children, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just has to sort of be experienced from that standpoint, which, you know, in teenage years is They're a little self-centered still.
Yes, of course.
Yes,
right, of course.
Understandably, we all were. And so I really hope that that's something that I can convey to them with regards to what's really important. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's hard to do in teenagers.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yes. Yes.
I remember those years.
Yes. Sometimes as adults, too.
True.
You know,
true.
We get very caught up. And I think, you know, even more after COVID, you know, I mean, honestly, we're all kind of still in our heads a lot. Yeah. And it was traumatizing as a world.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes the lack of empathy and grace, I hope we recover soon from that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and picture that though. Like, so you already have a cancer issue, right? And then you COVID on it.
Whole,
and so you had patients in the hospital who were getting brand new diagnoses and they had no family with them.
No.
It was
tragic. They passed away with no family.
It was awful. Yeah.
I think it's sad now. I was recently just at the general doctor's office and that the fact that they have to have this thing on the wall that says, like, give us grace. Yeah. Don't yell at us. Yes. Don't be mean to us. Like, all of this stuff.
It happens all
like,
the time though.
And I was like, I'm really sad that you have to have this on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been seeing that a lot more places too.
Yeah. People just aren't very...
It was bad. It has been bad for a long time. But I do think the general public doesn't see the backstory of like all the insurance junk.
Oh,
right?
No.
So they don't realize that the reason the scan is taking extra days is because we're fighting as hard as we can with their insurance company behind the scenes.
Exactly.
So they're very upset. They're angry. They think that somebody dropped the ball when really we're like, we're working our tails off back here trying to do it. And so I think I wish there was more transparency with what is actually happening with the insurances and all the admin work on the back end, because, you know, people wonder why they can't get in to see their physician because they're so busy. Well, it's because I'm also super busy doing all this
stuff.
Exactly. That shouldn't be on the doctor's plate, but has become that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I just wish there was more. Because I think empathy goes both ways, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I do my very best to empathize with patients. It's just hard for them to see it on our end because they don't see it. Like, it's all behind the scenes, right? It's not like we show them all this paperwork and all this stuff that's happening.
Yes.
But I do think if they knew that, and I think if there was transparency to that, I think there'd be an easier, you know, relationship between that too.
In their mind, they're, you know, I have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not getting in tomorrow?
Correct. That's
their exactly family right. is, you know, oh my goodness, my loved one has cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they not getting this scan right now?
Correct.
You know?
Yeah. 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 It's hard.
So I would say that the majority of our audience are dealing with aging parents or maybe an unfortunate diagnosis themselves. So what is your best advice for those people who are navigating taking care of aging parents or parents that are ill?
Yeah. Well, honestly, there are a couple of things. And one of the things that I think is, doesn't even matter if it's aging, I think everybody should do it, is that I think you have to be cognizant of being prepared.
Yeah.
Because none of us know when something's going to happen, right?
No.
Yeah.
And so frequently we get to the point where nothing's been talked about. Nothing's been prepared. So they've never talked to their loved one about what they want at the end of life. They don't know what kind of resuscitation. They don't have a will. They don't have their passwords written down somewhere. It's just all this stuff that doesn't get dealt with. Yeah. And some of it I feel like is superstition. It's almost like if I do that, something's going to happen.
That is so true. That is so true.
Yeah. If we talk about it, then
then it's going to happen.
I'm going to manifest it.
Yes. And then you killed grandma because you planned. Like, it's all your fault.
You should have asked for her checking account number.
So I feel like that's a huge part of how do you best take care of your aging parent? Talk to them, right? And ask them what they want. And, you know, have them write down the stuff that they want you to do. But I think that's huge. Yeah. I think if they're willing to let you be part of the, if they have health issues, if they're willing to let you be part of that conversation, or at least understand from their visits what's happening, I think that's a big deal. Because, you know, if the child doesn't know the extent of the medical issues that are going on, but clearly the patient needs help, then it's a very difficult scenario where their expectations are really off.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they just don't, they just don't understand how severe or how significant something is. So it's hard for them to know how to help.
And you don't want to be doing all of that when your loved one is sick.
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've always been a big believer in the more you can talk to your spouse and be open and write things down and be prepared, the better from that standpoint.
Yep.
Yeah.
And have life insurance.
Yeah. Really expensive.
Yes. No. But honestly, you know, talking about, I mean, you know, I mean, right down to, I will hear, you know, do they want to be buried? Do they want to be cremated?
That's exactly right.
That those type of things you need to talk about.
Yeah.
You really do. You need to talk about.
Yeah. So fun side fact is that when I first started the nonprofit under Love and Legacy, the other part that I created was what's called the Family Navigator. Mm-hmm. And so it's this, it's like 140 page PDF document.
Yeah.
That is literally everything you could possibly think of to record and write down about your accounts, anything from finances, cars, your pets, your children, everything. And part of that was there's a section in there about digital footprint because nobody thinks about what happens to your social media accounts when you die. Yeah. What happens, like who has access to your iCloud, right?
Yes.
So there's all this stuff that it just disappears because Apple won't help you crack it, you know? So if they don't have a passcode, they can't get into it.
Yes.
So it's everything. So we created this huge document and that, long story, I'm now transitioning that over to Mission Cancer Foundation so they can kind of take the ball since it doesn't really fit our mission of the videos.
Yeah.
But I was like, I created this whole thing. I don't want it to die, right? Because it's so needed.
Oh my gosh.
And so we're working on giving access, hopefully, I shouldn't say, I don't know if it's going to be free, but I think it will be, right? Or at least very minimal cost. But I think we all appreciate that those are the things that really need to be documented so that your loved one knows what to do.
Yeah.
And where these things are, my husband would have no idea
how
to get into accounts and nothing.
Yeah. So instead of a nurse navigator, it's a family navigator.
Yeah.
God and bless those nurse navigators.
Yeah.
And do you do it in paper form and you have it somewhere or do you both? You
can do it either. Yeah. So it's actually designed so that it can be filled in electronically.
That's amazing.
Okay. And you can print it if you want to. Like my mother, God bless her, is old school.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure she probably would print out 140 pages and handwrite it.
Yeah. Yep. That'll be me.
But then she won't leave the combination for the safe that it's in.
Yeah. but we did it purposely so that most people, I think, nowadays are at least digitally savvy enough that they can do it.
Yeah.
And a lot of us are well averse to typing. And so it's easy to just hop in and fix something. So we did it both ways so that you could either print it or you could just fill it in electronically and save it on the file. But it's just, I really felt like it was needed. And there's a whole section there about exactly that. Like, what do you do about burial or cremation or, you know, all these other things. So we honestly tried to think of everything.
I love that.
Possibly.
Please let us know when it's done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
It's actually done. I just gotta give you access.
Yes. Yes.
That's
fantastic. Yeah. Well, even if there is a fee, maybe it could be something that goes to the nonprofit or donated somehow.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah. That's actually what we talked about was whether it could just go back into the Michigan Association. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, it definitely sounds like, I mean, the cure for many things is just finding opportunities for happiness, being in nature. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really, that's what we all need to be doing.
Yeah.
Touch some grass.
Yeah.
Get your feet in the dirt.
Yeah.
Get away from your screens. Yeah. I mean, I sometimes wonder these things we're carrying around all day, if that is having an effect as well.
Oh, I don't have any doubt. I don't have any doubt. I talked to my oldest is just about to be 15.
Oh,
and all of them, I have three children, all of them, if you let them, would sit on their electronic all day long, right? None of my children have phones.
Mm-hmm.
Not about to get them a phone right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they have like an iPad that they'll game on or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't stand. I would pitch all of them because their attitude changes.
Yes.
You know, their attitude changes when they're on it. And when all of a sudden they're off of it and you have them away from it and we're in nature, you know, they're grumpy when they first get there. And,
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you're having fun and you're doing all this stuff and you're getting dirty and you're playing in the yard. And then it's like, oh, I don't want to go home, you know, back to Ankeny. I'm like, well,
exactly.
Right? Like, this is what we were trying to get you out to do.
Exactly.
We have such clear data about how negative so much of the electronic time is on developing brains. It's so clear. And yet all the schools give them Chromebooks.
Exactly.
All their work is online.
Yeah.
So they're never not online, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, the whole separate issue of social media and cyberbullying and stuff, right? So it's like one of the worst things I think we could have ever done was just give electronic access all day long to our kids. Yeah. You know, and teachers
we
are like...
We failed our children in that way.
Yeah, totally. And teachers are like, well, they're not doing their schoolwork. Well, it's because they're probably playing a game while they're on their Chromebook in the middle of class, right? It's just...
Yeah.
It's one of the worst things we've ever done.
Yeah.
And kids are smart. They can get around any
parental
block.
Oh, yes. I know. They come out of the womb like that. They come out of the womb as little hackers.
It's amazing. Well, and then it doesn't help that you have people actually online doing it for us about how to get around them.
Yeah. Right down to how to unwrap a present.
I mean, the amount. A tutorial?
Yes, there's kids that are making
like YouTube videos
watching other kids open gifts.
The whole thing is weird.
Yes.
The stuff that some of these, that's the thing is that, so now one of my children at one point was like, I'm going to be a YouTuber.
Oh, of course. Yes.
But how do you argue? Some of those YouTubers make millions of dollars.
They do.
It's crazy. Yeah,
they're influencers.
It's such a foreign thing for me. But
I know.
I would love to just keep them off electronics.
Yes.
As long as you can.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for everything that you do.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
I definitely did not miss my calling. I about pass out when I get my blood drawn. So I would not have been a good doctor or nurse. Our youngest daughter's considering the path of medicine. So that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you for all that you do. And just your heart for your patients.
Yes.
Because I think there are a lot of doctors that start to lose that or they don't have that heart connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever I meet doctors that have that, it gives me hope.
Yes.
I appreciate it. It definitely, I can see why it can be lost just because it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's a hard thing to.
Yeah.
You know,
you have to shut things down to get through it. Then that thing gets shut down. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And it's not getting easier. And the support is becoming less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know. So again, like Wendy said, thank you for everything that you do.
Yeah.
And thank you for the nonprofit.
Yeah.
The nonprofit work.
That's what keeps me going.
Yes. And that's amazing. You found something as an outlet to bring that love and that meaning for your work. And you can definitely see that.
Yeah. I'm just, I could talk all day long about the nonprofit. Mm-hmm. I just think it's I think it's so incredible to be able to do that for patients. So good. Send anybody my way.
Well, I literally was just thinking of the, you know, my patients that I have down at John Stoddard. What a wonderful gift.
Yeah.
That this would be for them.
Absolutely.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Your SaaS-tastic life is produced by Apex Creative. Go to apexcreative.vip. That's APEXX creative.vip.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure you follow us. Follow our sassiness on social media. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on the LinkedIn.
Be sure to go out and live your most sass-tastic life.
And also on the YouTubes, friends.
Oh, shit.